Desana on the 19th of October, 1979. The words of the Lord Buddha are not small or insignificant things, for they originate from the heart of the Lord Buddha that was full of marvel and wonder, surpassing all other things. If they had not been so, how then would they have been capable of uprooting and eradicating the kilesas that have been embedded within the hearts of all sentient beings, and delivering them from dukkha, then attaining to the realization of Dhamma in great numbers, right in the presence of the Lord Himself? In truth, they are very significant and vital. The Dhamma of the Lord Buddha is transcendental and wonderful Dhamma, capable of truly suppressing and eliminating the kilesas. The results gained therefrom can be gained instantaneously, right there and then. This is what the power of truth is really like. Memory has no such power. There is not a single kilesa that can be got rid of by memory. For instance, when one can recite like a parrot, Nibbanang paramang sukhang, Nibbanang paramang sunyang. Nibbana is the supreme happiness. Nibbana is the supreme emptiness. This doesn't get one to Nibbana. One who has realized Nibbana has got to Nibbana whether he talks about Nibbana or not. For this is the genuine truth. So we must strive in our practice until we realize the truth within ourselves. Then every facet and aspect of Dhamma will be really weighty, because all of these Dhammas are truthful and are waiting for one who is imbued with the truth to compare and verify the truthfulness of both parties. As this living truth is fully represented and inscribed in the texts, but the citta of one who reads the text and memorizes it is not like the kind of citta described in the text, for it is still overshadowed by the kilesas. When he commits these dhammas to memory, he does so under the influence of the kilesas. He doesn't fix the dhamma in his mind with the truth, which is the genuine way of doing it. Therefore, there is stark contrast between them. It is only by the way of practicing Dhamma and the realizing of the Dhamma within one's heart that one will be able to fathom and comprehend the weight and real substance of the truth of the Lord Buddha, and realized just how supreme the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha really is. This can only be achieved and comprehended within the citta. The Dhamma arises inside the citta and nowhere else. Sati and Panya appear in the citta. Ignorance also arises within the citta. The kilesas appear in the citta. Dhamma arises in the citta. It is in the citta that we overcome and correct the kilesas. And it is in the citta that we attain to freedom. Nowhere else is the place for the overcoming and correcting of the kilesas, and the place for the attainment to freedom. The practitioner must relentlessly and ceaselessly turn round in towards the citta. He has to drive inwards, for this is the way of subduing the kilesas with the Dhamma of truth. You have to investigate everything in the entire physical universe that the citta becomes entangled with. We have to do this. We cannot afford not to do it. We have to find out the cause of the involvement. What are the things that the kilesas are involved and entangled with, and which, as a consequence of this action, bring us trouble and hardship? Sati and Panya must follow them and catch up with them. There is nothing that can escape from the truth. For this reason, the Lord said, Dukkhang Ariya Satyang. Although it is dukkha, it is a form of truth. The world has no desire for it. How was it that the Lord said, Dukkhang Ariya Satyang, Samudaya Ariya Satyang? Dukkha is a noble truth. The origin of dukkha is a noble truth. This is because they are truly so. If we do not correct and overcome the kilesas, tanha and asava, following their true and natural principle, then none of them will ever be eliminated. It is therefore necessary to correct and overcome them with the truth, which is the Magga Ariya Satyang. The path is a noble truth. Then Nirodha, the cessation of dukkha, will really appear. Thus it is called Nirodha Ariya Satyang. The cessation of dukkha is truth. It cannot be otherwise. They are all found within the citta. The citta is the vessel and the home of the kilesas, tanha and asava, the vata samsara, and every form of dukkha and torment. The citta is the storehouse of these things. It is also the citta that brings about truth and dhamma. They arise inside the citta. Wisdom arises inside the citta. The kilesas are subdued inside the citta. One attains to freedom inside the citta. The kilesas dissolve within the citta. The transcendental marvel and wonder is the citta and dhamma. Having arrived at that stage, this state can either be called dhamma or the purified citta. The term citta is only used during the time that one is in possession of the khandhas, because the khandhas are samuti. And as the citta still takes up residence with these khandhas, it has to abide with the conventions of samuti, despite its preeminence. But it has to conform to the ways of samuti, the conventional ways of the world, so that it can be comprehended on the level of samuti. Once one has attained to the ultimate truth, it doesn't make any difference what label one may ascribe to it. The only problem there is with the kilesas. The kilesas are extremely tenacious. There is no other form of work that can be more arduous and toilsome as the work of overcoming, correcting, and uprooting the kilesas that are so deeply embedded within the heart. The kilesas are correspondingly infinite as the heart is infinite. They go as deep as the heart goes deep. They can equally match up with the heart. For this reason, they are capable of dominating the citta and are capable of dragging the citta to wander ceaselessly through the various realms of existence. If we wanted to display the forms of birth and the dukkha and torment that one person has gone through, there would be enough of them to fill this whole world. Should we want to compete amongst ourselves with our kilesas, tanha, asava, birth and existences, and dukkha and torment, there would not be enough room for us to display them. For we have experienced them for such a very long time. All of these have been influenced by the power of the kilesas. You have to really take this to heart and really get to understand it. In overcoming and correcting the kilesas, one cannot do it superficially. If one does not really and earnestly work to get to the truth, one will never come across this truth. The kilesas are a true reality. One has to tread earnestly on the Magga Patipada, the path of practice, the means of subduing the kilesas. One must seriously exert oneself in the practice so that one can get to the reality of the Magga. One will then get to the reality of the kilesas, which are the rivals of the Magga. One will then be able to eliminate and vanquish them in the same earth-shattering way that the Lord Buddhas and the Savakas did it. The things that they did still reverberate right on down to the present day. They are the supreme and noble people that reign over the hearts of all Buddhist followers. People of all Buddhist countries take up the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha into their hearts and give them the highest respect and veneration. How else could they become the chief attraction that pulls the heart of everyone if their own hearts were not supreme and transcending the world? We have to make our hearts receptive and capable of accommodating them. Once our heart becomes receptive, then every aspect of their truth will steadily merge with our heart. The work of contending with the kilesas, of disciplining and mastering the kilesas, of correcting and overcoming the kilesas, is an arduous task. I can fully attest this fact without having any qualms or any misgivings. It is most difficult to discipline human beings. It is much more difficult than training and mastering any kind of animal. This is because human beings are far superior to any other animals, speaking from the Samuti standpoint. Correspondingly, the development of human beings takes far greater effort than that of the animals. It requires a much greater degree of strength and energy, sati and panya, labor and exertion, and endurance and perseverance. Everything that must be put forth for the development and progress of our heart must be far greater in strength and intensity than that of the animals. For this reason, the disciplining and development of human beings is the most difficult and hardest thing to do. Who are these human beings? The term human being is extremely extensive and general. Speaking in this context may precipitate thoughts that can go in an unwholesome way. It may sound like one is being contemptuous of all human beings. Here, I am not referring to or speaking about all human beings, but rather, this refers to what the Lord Buddha spoke about himself. This is talking about the way in which the Tathagata had disciplined and mastered himself. In his exertion, he strived until he passed out. Is this hard and difficult or not? The training and mastering of a human being. Before he can become the Sasada of the world. We have also read from the text how tough and formidable it was for the Savakas to discipline and master themselves. All of them were human beings. Was this work of disciplining and developing themselves arduous and toilsome or not? How can we expect to build a house that is well proportioned, charming, pleasing to the eyes, firm and solid, by carving it out of a tree with a single plane? We cannot achieve this if we do not follow the proper way of building it. When we say how hard and formidable is the work of training, developing, mastering, and disciplining human beings, we are referring to ourselves. We are responsible for ourselves, and we have to discipline and master ourselves so that we can become good and virtuous people. This is the way of dissolving all evils, which are the works of the kilesas, leaving just the goodness that will appear within our hearts. This work is therefore extremely arduous and difficult. If this is the way, then the intensity of our exertion must equally match it. Otherwise, we will not be able to come up with any results. We have to contend with them blow for blow. We must not be afraid of death, for it is a shadow that always accompanies us. When the time comes, good people, bad people, people possessed with the kilesas, and purified people, we all have to die. Everybody, without exception, must die. In this respect, no one surpasses another. Once one has acquired a body, one has then accumulated an aggregate of death. However, before this comes to pass, let us achieve the work of training, disciplining, and mastering ourselves, and totally subdue and eliminate the kilesas, so that we can attain to ease and happiness. Once the kilesas have embedded themselves within our heart, then it is not possible for us to be at ease. Though we might pretend that we are happy, smiling, and cheerful, this is really putting up a front. Internally, it is full of dark shit, for truly, inside the heart, there is just the filth of greed, the filth of hatred, and the filth of delusion, full to the brim within one's heart. But externally, One is smiling and cheerful, which is like a showcase, which is totally devoid of any value. This is not the kind of ornament that we are looking for. We are looking for the real kind of adornment that can get to the real thing, which means the Dhamma getting to the citta. We want them to get into one another by depending on our mode of practice as the means of merging them together. This Dhamma is what all truth seekers are striving for, and they must really exert themselves to get into this truth. Consider the Lord Buddha, for example. One should always look up to the Lord as the ideal model in the way of practice. When one meets with difficulty and is in a predicament, and one's heart becomes weakened and discouraged, one must then reflect upon the teacher. The Lord expounded this in one of the suttas. When one goes into battle, one should reflect upon the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. And at the end of this sutta, the Lord said, "O bhikkhus, when you are dwelling in a deserted shed, or at the roots of the trees in the forest, and you happen to come across any form of danger, then you should think and call to mind the Tathagata, and then this peril will vanish. But if this hazard does not disappear, then you must reflect upon the Dhamma. When you have recollected this Dhamma, which is like the three banners of the Triple Gem, and the danger still does not disappear, then you must call to mind the Sangha. Then all the perils will disappear." Thus the Lord taught us the way of lifting up the banner. The Lord Buddha is the victor, and we must summon him up into our heart. Then courage will appear. It is not that once you call up the Lord Buddha, then weaknesses will arise. For this is not so. It is likewise with all of us here. We should always look back upon the Patipada, the mode of practice of the Lord Buddha, when we go through trouble and hardship. The heart that is possessed with the kilesas cannot freely express itself. Every action of the heart is under the control of the kilesas. It is like a prisoner who is always watched by the guard. The warden will constantly watch over and oversee the inmate while going in and out of the cell. It is likewise with the activity and movement of the khandhas, having sanya and sankhara as the principal ones. In any way that they express themselves, they are always accompanied by the kilesas. The kilesas are the guard that oversees them, like the warden that watches over the inmate. Whatever comes into contact, the kilesas will be the first ones to get to it. They will get to do the work before we can, while we still haven't come to grips with what is happening. We are like a buffalo which is being held in leash and left to graze in the pasture. We are totally ignorant of the kilesas and asavas and of the hazards and poisons that are harmful to us. The kilesas, therefore, have a great time in building up their power and influence over the hearts of all sentient beings. No living being can escape from their grip, apart from those who take up the Dhamma, the teaching of the Lord Buddha as the thing to compare and contrast, and as the competitor to the kilesas, to suppress the kilesas with strenuous exertion. Otherwise, the citta will never have any liberty or freedom. Even the flow or condition of the citta, that is being concocted up all the time, is always under the influence and control of the kilesas. We have to strive and achieve the total elimination of the kilesas. And then these things will be vividly obvious within ourselves. Before, when they exhibit themselves, we are not capable of perceiving them. But when we have developed sati, panya, satta, and diligent effort, and have totally got rid of the kilesas, then whichever khanda might show itself, it will be purely a khanda. There will not be any kilesas to mess around, to master and control, and to inflict trouble upon oneself, as a consequence of one's thinking and concocting, one's sanya aramana, one's seeing and hearing. They are plain and simple khandas. One merely sees and hears, tastes the various kinds of flavors, smells the various kinds of odor, and it will be mere concocting and thinking, mere memory and perception, plain and simple, that arises and ceases. They do not have any possessor or master, like the kilesas that used to dominate over them. The khanda then become free and exist in their natural state. Once the kilesas, which are the chief culprit, have finally dissolved, the khandas then become the instrument of Dhamma. They are then used for the elucidation of the substance of Dhamma, so that the world can fully understand, like the Lord Buddha, who after having attained to full enlightenment, taught the world for 45 years. He used the khandas as the instrument of Dhamma. As the kilesas had been completely obliterated, there wasn't a single kilesas that could bother the khandas anymore. What kind of bliss and happiness will that be, once one is free and released from the prison of the vata jaka and the vata citta? The vata jaka is the ceaseless round of birth, aging, illness, and death. The vata jaka is the ceaseless change and evolution of the citta that is still influenced and dominated by the kilesas. The vata jaka and the vata citta have now been destroyed by the Maggayana or the Majjhima Patipada. One can now see very clearly that the kilesas, regardless of how many there are the chief culprits that control every activity of the khandas. The khandas fall under the power of the kilesas and have no freedom in themselves. The one who has to reap the khandas actions that are forced on by the kilesas is the heart. The heart then becomes like a toilet bowl. All the products of impurity and filth, of greed, hatred, and delusion, and raka tanha, are amassed, collected, and dumped into the heart, bringing the heart nothing but dukkha and torment. How then can one find a way out of this? But when all of this filth and impurity has dispersed and dissolved, then we can see clearly that there is nothing to oppress and lord it over the heart. throughout the day and night, one can now freely see whatever one wants to look at. There isn't any concern that there can be any love or hatred that can arise from looking, hearing, tasting, smelling, and touching. There is complete freedom between the internal and external ayatana, as well as the exclusive thinking process of the citta, where there are just Dhamma Ramana. This Dhamma Ramana were originally under the control of the kilesas. They cause one to think and concoct up about all the past experiences that one saw or heard, and about all sorts of things, either good or bad. They were responsible for one being endlessly engrossed and preoccupied with this thinking within the heart. This is called Dhamma Ramana. But when all of them have totally vanished, then all of these Dhamma Ramana are no longer like that, for they have now gone in the way of Dhamma. One cannot freely and naturally think about this or about that, for there will not be any kilesas appearing. They have all vanished. So how can they arise again? There is no more dukkha. This is the result of the suppression, training, and disciplining of human beings, which is each and every one of us. You have to really and earnestly exert yourselves, even if it is difficult and hard. The Lord Buddha already cultivated this way, and so did all of the Savakas. They made themselves the example that we could follow. We are also followers of the Tathagata. So how can we be feeble in our energy and effort, and relent in our striving and exertion? This does not befit one who is a follower of the Tathagata, and one who is in the battle front. One who is in the battlefront is a bhikkhu. Furthermore, we are Gamatana bhikkhus, who are intent and have set our hearts in the practice for the total realization of the four Sajjadhammas within those hearts. But if now we become weak and discouraged, then this does not accord with the Dhamma principle. Therefore, you must be earnest and serious. Don't ever forget that the training and disciplining of human beings is extremely difficult and hard. This is a very vital point. Every kind of kilesa, from the coarse to the intermediate to the subtle ones, are all harmful and poisonous, and are like fire. Be it the fire itself, or the sparks from the fire, they are all hot. They only differ in their intensity. All of them are detrimental. It is best to extinguish all of them. Then it will be nati santi parang sukhang. There is no other happiness that can be greater than the happiness of the ultimate peace, which is the consequence of the total extinction of the kilesas. This is the ultimate peace that the practitioner will come to possess. There is no need to ask anybody about it. It doesn't make any difference how long ago the Lord Buddha passed into parinibbana. One speaks this out of great respect for the Lord, and not out of contempt for Him. For whom did the Lord teach sanditti go? For whom did He teach Pachatang Veditabo Vinyuhi, or the Machima Patipada Tathagatena Apisambhuta? Who else did the Lord teach these things to, if not to all of us, so that we could practice following the correct way that the Lord trod before us with this same Patipada? Whom did He aim His teaching at, in order to correct and overcome the kilesas. We have to do it right here. How can we not know when the kilesas steadily disappear and happiness and coolness of heart arises correspondingly as a consequence of their disappearance? The principles of Sanditigo that the Lord passed on down to us were not solely reserved for the Lord Buddha himself, or all of the Savakas who had attained to Nibbana. For the Lord bestowed this along with the Majjhima Patipada. They go together. When you set your heart and concentrate in your practice, then you must get to see and realize and experience these things right within your heart. You will be totally rid of doubt right within your heart. In no other place will you become free of it. This place is extremely important. I have great concern for my fellows in Dhamma. I myself am getting older and older with every passing day. Eventually, I will have to lay down my responsibility, as I will not be able to give any more exhortation and instruction. It will be necessary to let go of it, for it is enough of a burden trying to take care of the khandhas, and there will not be enough strength or energy to share out the happiness to others in the way of teaching them. One will just have to leave things to be as they are, like the Venerable Ajahn Chah, who has let go of everything now. All that he does now is just to observe his breath, just watching the breath. And when it is no longer there, then it will be time for him to go. But the crucial thing is his heart, which is never weakened. He is just playing with a puppet, which is the khandhas. Parahave Panja Khanda. The five khandhas are a very heavy burden. One plays with them until their time comes. After letting go of them, one will be free of one's responsibility. In terms of the world, this means to be totally free of worry. One is now totally rid of all confusion, because the khandhas are the chief of confusion and disturbance at all times. The number of teachers are steadily decreasing. Those who can stand as a basis and standard in the aspect of practice, which can bring out the Dhamma, which is a consequence of practice, going up steadily stage by stage, are now nearly extinct. Now is the time to concentrate in putting in your effort and striving in your exertion. You must never see anything to be more wonderful and supreme than the Dhamma. For within this entire physical universe, nothing is. If there were such a thing, then the citta would not let go of it. It would not let go of it and then withdraw inward. It would not abandon the upadana, the fixed views and attachments. It would not let go of love and affection. It would not relinquish hatred and anger, as these things are relished by the world. The world likes anger, even though it knows that it is harmful. But nevertheless, people are contented with being angry. They are also fond of love. According to the truth principle, they are not good. They are all harmful. There is nothing else that is better than the citta. When this fact becomes apparent, one will steadily let go of those things that one has attachment for, has fixed views about, that one used to presume and assume about, and was entangled with for kalpas and kalpas, then drawing steadily inwards. For the Dhamma is their competitor. For example, consider the state of calm and coolness of heart. This state of calm and coolness of heart is the basic ground in the beginning stages of practice. When they appear, one will be able to see the difference between the happiness that one used to experience in the past and the happiness that arises from the cultivation of Dhamma. One will naturally realize and understand this without having to do any comparison. And as to which one is better than the other, one will know this right within one's heart. One will then let go of them and withdraw inwards steadily. The more subtle the Dhamma that one realizes, then the more wonderful and marvelous it will be. One will further let go of all those things that one used to be attached to, both the gross, the intermediate, and the subtle kinds. The grosser kind will not be able to match with Dhamma, neither will the intermediate kind, and neither will the subtle kind. Their worth and value are not capable of matching up with Dhamma. Once the citta can comprehend Dhamma, then it will naturally let go of other things. It will let go of them by itself. It will keep on letting go of things until there is nothing left to let go of. It will then have relinquished everything. It will have gained release from the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches, which are paired respectively with the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body. This will subsequently bring it to the five khandhas: rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana, which it is attached to. But it will also relinquish this, as they are not something good. They are not the essential substance that can bring about the kind of benefit that one can be satisfied with. One keeps on steadily letting go of them until one arrives at the citta. What is the cause of love and affection within the citta? What is the cause of entanglement with the citta? What is the cause of attachment and fixed views within the citta? There is a cause. There is a culprit. One keeps on penetrating until one clearly realizes the truth of that thing. That thing will not be able to match up with the citta. It will not be able to come up to Dhamma. One will then also let go of that, until there is nothing else to let go of. Everything entirely is relinquished. One has let go of the external, and then one withdraws inwards. One then lets go of everything, totally within, until nothing remains. So what else is there to relinquish? In summarizing the way of practice, it seems rather easy. Looking back at the way one had to exert oneself, at the mode of practice, one really had to put in one's life. One was ready to give up one's life in exchange for what one was aspiring for. When the time is ripe for those who ought to realize, then they will be the ones to attain to enlightenment. So may all of you set up your heart and be determined. Don't ever get into any kind of trouble, especially the coarser and external kinds. You must never let it happen here. From the time that this monastery was established, there has never been any such conflict. There has never been any friction or quarrel, because everyone has always been intent on truth and Dhamma. It is then easy for people to come to agreement and understanding, As far as the kilesas are concerned, we know that we are here to overcome them. So at the same time, we must never flaunt them about, causing disturbances among ourselves, as this is the worst way of bringing shame and disgrace upon ourselves, right in the retreat of those who are intent on truth and Dhamma. You have to get to understand this. One who flaunts virtue is one who flaunts evil, for there is no goodness in doing this. Each time that one shows off, one is merely exposing one's evil clearly for the whole world to see. If one is really good, there will be no need for one to show it off, as it will be obvious. One who is good and doesn't flaunt it is really good. One who practices Dhamma only looks in the light of reason, of cause and effect. Even if one wants to be good, if the cause of one's goodness is not there, then it will be to no avail. All there will be is just the desire to be good. And when one displays it, it is merely putting up a front, which is of no benefit, apart from debasing oneself to the depths where one cannot go lower. All of these things are of a gross nature. We must never allow them to appear, for this is the worst disgrace that we can bring upon ourselves and our fellows in Dhamma. There isn't the slightest bit of good in it. Each one of us is possessed with the poisonous and harmful kilesas. So at the same time, we must also have Dhamma as the means of suppressing our own kilesas. How can we allow them to go out and mess around, fighting like dogs? Bhikkhus are not dogs, and a monastery is not a dog kennel. When bhikkhus quarrel, it is like dogs biting each other. When this thing happens, it is the worst thing that can ever happen. Here I am merely illustrating a point, so that you can all understand. It doesn't mean that the bhikkhus here have any quarrel or dispute. I am merely pointing out the differences between the damage and the value of evil and good. The difference between the harm of wickedness and the worth of virtue. We are here to find the worth, the virtue, and the excellence of ourselves. In everything we have to be vigilant, in whichever way these things manifest themselves. We have to realize that this is the kilesas on the move. One has to search for the cause of their arising. Why is one not happy with this or that bhikkhu? Why must one become enraged? This rage and resentment are the work of the kilesas, and we are already aware of them. So why do we still allow them to run around, crashing in on the heart, without giving any attention to correcting them? The more one becomes engrossed in thinking about the one whom one resents, then the more intensely will one be enhancing the kilesas. One then becomes even more deluded, and one is then really in error. We must turn around and look into the citta, the one who performs the act, and it is within ourselves. If it is fire, it is already burning us. It hasn't yet burned anyone else, but we are the ones to be burnt by it first. So this is where we have to apply the remedy. As a practitioner, one must always open up ego, draw inwards. Keep on drawing inwards. One must not go out to the external, going out of bounds and limits. End of Detsana.